Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty. Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
What's up, what's up? Big Blue Nation. Anita Marks, Paul Dottino. Just as the gentleman said, it is time for Big Blue Kickoff Live, an opportunity for you to get in on the show, talk everything Big Blue. Is the Giants sitting at 0-4. Host Chip Kelly, this high-octane offense of the Philadelphia Eagles, Michael Vick, LeSean McCoy, DeSean Jackson on Sunday. I'm excited. You listen, out of these two teams, they just have one win. And we're already heading into week 5 of the NFL season. And typically, if you look at teams across the board that have that type of record, you're not tuning in. You could care less, right? I'm not, tonight, for example, Buffalo and Cleveland, really? I mean, I'm going to watch just because it's Thursday night football. I'll probably be at some restaurant, sitting at the bar, eating a steak, having a glass of wine, and the game will be right in front of my face. So, but other than that, you're not watching, but it's the Eagles and it's the Giants. And you're watching. This is the NFC East, and granted, the NFC East, they have not been playing well at all. And I do want to get into that because I had Terrell Thomas on Big Blue Hits live yesterday, and want to share with you some of the things that he said in regard to the standings and what's going on in the NFC East.
That is archived, by the way, on the site, Giants.com. Folks, you should check it out.
Shameless plug. Thank you very much.
Why
Paul
not?
Latino. But I'm excited for this game. I really am very, very, very excited. I want to see the Giants step up. I want to see how they're going to try to defend Michael Vick. I want to see how they're going to try to slow down this offense. They're going to need to run the ball. They're going to need to win the time of possession battle to keep Michael Vick and that offense off the field. I want to see if the Philadelphia Eagles, their defense is horrendous. So is this an opportunity for Eli Manning in this passing attack, let alone David Wilson, get open in space and really create, run for some yards, pass for some yards, score some touchdowns? Is this the game it all comes together, Paul Dottino?
It has to be, because this four-game slide has really caused a lot of downers here at the facility. And why not? But, you know, as Tom Coughlin said on Friday, and he's using this as the carrot that he's got to dangle in front of his team. And we understand it, folks. We talked about it yesterday and how there's kind of an inverse going on here where coaches and players usually don't pay attention to the standings. Well, the Giants have to, because by the time Sunday night rolls around, the Denver Broncos will have beaten up on the Dallas Cowboys, even though the game is in Dallas, I believe. And the Giants will be in position to draw within one game of first place. And if they should get this win and get some kind of feel-good feeling about themselves again, there is the possibility. Again, it's a tough call because they got to go out to Chicago on Wednesday for a Thursday night game. It's not going to be easy to do. But there is a possibility the Giants could get on a little bit of a roll here in that they will then come home from Minnesota. Minnesota's got a lot of quarterback problems right now. And then they'll get Philadelphia again the week after that. So you're talking about four games in the NFC East, or two games in the East, and four games in the conference before the bye. This would be a great time for the Giants to get on a little bit of a roll. It's possible. None of these teams in front of them right now are humongous, King Kong, Godzilla-type teams, okay? They've already been through those teams, the Denvers, the Kansas Cities, the good teams. They've kind of been through them right now. These are teams that are beatable if the Giants get their act together. And they should be grateful for that.
201-939-4513 is the phone number. As I said, I had Terrell Thomas on Big Blue Hits yesterday. Hopefully you tuned in. If not, as Paul Dottino said, it's up on the site. It's archived if you do want to watch it. And without me even posing the question, Paul, he immediately went to the fact that, look, the NFC East is really horrible right now. And the fact that the Dallas Cowboys are sitting at 2-2, keep in mind, they do take on the Denver Broncos. I don't know who can beat the Denver Broncos. Maybe the Kansas City Chiefs. I feel that if Brandon Flowers is healthy, that's really the only team, in my opinion, that that can match up with them well. I think Dallas gets destroyed by Peyton Manning. Their secondary is horrible. I think Denver's defense is a lot better than Dallas's, so I think Tony Romo and the guys are going to have a tough time. So I do believe Dallas is going to go 2-3. The Washington Redskins are on a bye, and if the Giants beat Philadelphia, well, then that's one step closer to potentially turning this season around and maybe winning the NFC East. I mean, there was I don't want to call it an argument, but there was a debate in the cafeteria yesterday with a few of the media folk saying what wins the NFC East? Will 7-9 win the NFC East this year? It very well could.
Look at the Cowboys schedule coming up.
How embarrassing is that?
You know, it seems to me that this once proud division, which has fallen into the tank. I mean, let's not pull any punches here. This division is just really bad right now. It's probably one of the worst two divisions in football. Is still extremely competitive. And that's what makes it fun to watch. Because these rivalry games, the Cowboys, the Giants, the Redskins, the Eagles, these rivalry games are always going to bring something to the table, no matter how bad the teams are. And I've talked about this many times over the years, Anita. It doesn't matter if the Giants and Eagles are both absolutely horrible. You know when they get on the field, they're going to scrap. Chances are good, although the Giants hammered Philly at the end of last season when the Eagles obviously had quit on the season. Chances are pretty good that these teams are going to try to slug it out, and you're going to see some exciting plays in the game, which is why you opened up the show by saying you have to watch, because you do. Rivalry games force you to watch, and that's what the Giants have to build off of. Use that energy and intensity to try to beat Philadelphia.
Well, again, I just hate to continue to go back to Terrell Thomas, but I found it pretty interesting and intriguing that is a motivational factor where the NFC East division is right now, when typically, from the majority of football players, they don't pay attention to the standings. They don't pay attention to the scoreboard. They don't pay attention. They don't even know players' names. They just know numbers.
See, Coughlin would be proud, though, because Terrell Thomas obviously got the message.
Like, for example, last week we were in the locker room and the media asked JPP about Alex Smith. And he said, I don't want to talk about... It's not that he didn't know who Alex Smith was. You should have said, let's talk about... And I think... What is Alex wearing? Is he wearing 11?
I don't even know anymore.
For Kansas City?
I think he was.
Okay. Players don't know names.
They
know
numbers. Yeah.
So it's not that JPP didn't know who Alex... He just... You should have said, hey, let's talk about number 11.
or the quarterback instead of giving his name.
But JPP isn't alone in that, Paul.
Oh, I know.
Anyway, 201-939-4513. We're going to get to your calls in a hot second. But first, as always on Thursday, we hit it up with Eric Kennedy, owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. Eric will join us every Thursday to give us a sense of how the fans are feeling about the upcoming matchup each and every week. So let's bring Eric on. Eric, I'm terrified to even ask, like what your message boards and what the fans have been saying all week long now that the Giants are sitting 0-4.
Well, it's frustration. You know, you've got a situation where it reminds me. I mentioned this last week where when we first started this site, it was back in the Dan Reeves era, and it was a 5-5 season in '95 and a 6-10 season in '96, and the crowd basically broke into two groups, one the sort of self-defined realists and then the optimists, and we're sort of in that area right now. You've got the optimist saying exactly what you guys were just talking about, in that the division's a mess. 8-8 may win the division. Dallas is going to lose this week in all likelihood. You're seeing the same thing. I'm in the D.C. area, and the Redskins fans are already talking about that, how they can regain the East, and they've only got one win against a very bad Raiders team. So I think you've got people who are saying we're not really out of this yet, but for the most part, people, you know, recognize that the Giants just aren't very good right now. They look at the statistics on both offensively and defensively, and the points for, points against, the third down efficiency on offense and defense. You can just go up and down the statistical board and just see how the Giants are dead last in so many offensive and defensive statistics. And now the special teams have abandoned them, too. The kicking game, both kickers are struggling. They've given up two punt returns for a touchdown. So when you're bad in all three phases of the football game, it's no surprise that you're 0-4. That being said, the Giants could get back into this. There were some signs of life, so people are pointing to that. I think the number one frustration right now is, we mentioned last week how a lot of people were upset with Jerry Reese, and now fans are very upset with the offensive and the defensive coordinators, and that usually happens when you start seeing losses, as Perry Fuel and Kevin Gilbride get a lot of criticism from the fans.
Eric, you know, there's going to be a lot of Philadelphia fans who will make the trip up the turnpike, just like vice versa when the Giants go down to Philly. How vocal do you think the Giants fans are going to be at the beginning of this game? Antrel Roll said the other day, we need all the help and all the support we can get. I don't care where that edge is coming from. If it's got to be the crowd and the fans and they got to yell for us, well, then so be it. Do you suspect from what you're reading on the boards that the fans will come out strong for the Giants at the beginning of the game and try to give them a boost?
You know, that's a great question. And to be honest with you, I don't know, because the Giants haven't been in this position in a long time. I really think there is a little bit of we had some interesting discussions about this in the offseason, and how much impact has the two Super Bowl wins had on the fan base? Are they a little bit more satisfied than in the past? And a lot of the responses, which were interesting, were, you know, the two Super Bowl wins have made me more content as a fan. I can deal better with the low moments, with the bad defeats now, because I can point to that. I don't know how that would translate now in terms of the 0-4 start, because this was a discussion that was in the off season. So that combined with the fact that there's just, you know, in order for the fans to be loud, they've got to give the fans a reason to be loud. And it's, for instance, if we were, say the game, the Kansas City game, was in New York last week. So the Giants force a punt. Reuben Randle returns the punt 43 yards near midfield. But there's a holding penalty, or an illegal block penalty on the return by Justin Tratow. That brings the ball back. Same thing, you know, later in the game. The Giants might get a first down, say the one-handed catch by Hakeem Nicks, but there's a holding penalty in Will Beatty. It seems like every time they get some sort of momentum going, that something happens to stop that momentum. So I think if the Giants come out strong and they start playing well from the start, I think the crowd will get behind them. But if things start going badly from the beginning, you know, I could see this crowd very quickly turning on the team and you know, right or wrong, starting to boo the Giants.
Again, Eric Kennedy joining us, owner of Big Blue Interactive. Eric, I found Justin Tuck's comments post-game where he said if any Giants player turns on Tom Coughlin, he's going to punch them in the mouth. Just out of curiosity, you know, I honestly believe that the Giants' struggles right now have nothing to do with head coach Tom Coughlin. I agree with Justin Tuck, but curious, what are the fans saying on your site about Tom Coughlin?
Yeah, there was an interesting discussion on that very subject when that came out. And again, those who are already sort of set against Tom Coughlin and his staff use that as ammunition, whereas other people who sort of take your line, Anita, were saying, look, that's a player sticking up for his head coach. That's what you want. So it depends on your predisposition with head coach Tom Coughlin to begin with. If you think he's the problem, if you think Perry Fuel and Kevin Gilbride are the problem, you're going to look at a comment like that and say, you know, and criticize it. But if you're saying he's not the problem or he's not the talent's the issue or whatever, you're gonna look at that and say, hey, they're still fighting. I actually took it as a good thing for see a player sticking up for his coach, that Tom hasn't lost the locker room. I thought they played very hard against Kansas City, especially the defense. So I took umbrage with some of the comments from fans that said the Giants have quit on them, because I didn't see any quit against Kansas City. That was a tight game until the fourth quarter. They just couldn't overcome the special teams mistakes and the offensive ineptitude in the third quarter. But they fought hard in that game, and it's too bad that the game got away from them in the fourth quarter.
And you say the fans are recognizing that, Eric? I mean, because it seems to me that, you know, the Giants certainly did try hard in Kansas City. I can't fault their effort at all, as opposed to, you know, some of the criticisms that were made in Carolina, where maybe they didn't fight as hard for four quarters as maybe some people would have liked. I certainly recognized effort. I was on the sideline for the entire second half, and I could tell you those guys were fighting hard, and they were crushed when McCluster ran back that punt for a touchdown. That was a death blow to them. There's no question about that. But did they roll over? Absolutely not. And I think it. You know, you're telling me now the fans did recognize that on the message board, and that's good.
I think some do. I think some do, some don't. Again, Paul, it gets down to this, is how upset and how negative the fan, the individual fan is. There are some fans out there, and, you know, to a certain degree it's justified because of the results on the field, that they're looking for any little thing to criticize anything right now. So if they see the final score, they'll say, again, once again, you know, the Giants quit in this game if they're very, very upset. Then there are other fans that'll say, look, there were positives coming out of this game. There's something to build upon. It just depends on how, I hate to use this word because I don't want it to make it sound like I'm criticizing some fans, but it depends on how rational the fan is looking at the game. Sometimes, you know, emotion, it's an emotional game, and, you know, this is an embarrassing time for Giants fans. This is an embarrassing time, I'm sure, for the franchise. I hope they've taken down that Super Bowl clock in the locker room or wherever that is. But this is not a good time, and fans are frustrated, and especially after a game. If you want to get out, if you want to see the Giants fans at their very angriest and in their most irrational state, come on the game immediately. Come on the website immediately after the game's over, and everybody's upset. And again, one of the things about any fan board on for any site is it, when there's a bad loss or a bad season, fans come on to complain, and it makes them feel better that they're commiserating with other Giants fans that it, you know, they're venting, and that's what's going on right now. And I'm sure your callers are calling in right now and venting, and that's just part of the results of having a bad season. But they could get back into this thing. I mean, they just got to settle down and realize that. And it sounds, when Anita was talking about, the players are talking about, this division's still very much open for any of these teams to win it. Someone's going to have to go to the playoffs out of this division. 8-8 could do it. I think this game this weekend is basically a playoff game for the Giants. Whoever wins this game this weekend, Giants and Eagles, the other team's probably going to be out of it for good. The team that wins this is very much going to be, as scary as it sounds, is very much going to be in the division hunt still. Yeah, so
I wonder if the commissioner might just take the playoff spot away from the NFC East and tell them they're not allowed to go. He might just do that.
He just might do that. Years ago, take a playoff spot.
And they won
Giants.
A first round game at 7-9.
Yep.
If you can believe that, I mean, I still can't believe it, and it happened. So, Eric, always good to talk to you. Take care.
Good. Yeah, thank you, guys.
He has a very difficult job managing all of the negativism. And all of the, he used the word rational. Sometimes rational, sometimes irrational fan reaction that comes after these kinds of games. Heck, we got to deal with it all the time.
You're listening to Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513, coming to you live from the Giants facility. Again, just a reminder that the Giants do practice this afternoon. Following practice, Tom Coughlin will make himself available to the media. That interview will be up on Giants.com a little bit later. Locker room then opens. We'll have an opportunity to talk to some of the players. Also, don't forget, you have Big Blue Hits Live today, 4 p.m. Eastern Time with Paul, Roman, and myself. So make sure you tune into that here on Giants.com. And it's the same phone number to get into the show, by the way, at 4 o'clock Eastern Time, 201-939-4513.
Did you see this injury list yesterday? 15 players?
Yes.
Season high, 15 players for the Giants.
What's most concerning there in regard to the injury list and players who did not practice yesterday are the defensive tackles. Keep in mind you have LeSean McCoy coming to town, who's arguably one of the best running backs and has put up unbelievable stats so far this season. So all the defensive tackles, and the reason that the Giants brought in all these tackles is because they were, 24, 25 mm-hmm. in the NFL last year in run defense. And so with these guys all banged up, I'm a little concerned.
We have been told by coach to expect some snaps for rookie Jonathan Hankins, the second-round pick, the defensive tackle, who's obviously going to have to be pushed into action. He had a good training camp, and he's practiced well, so Tom's eager to see him. And DeMontre Moore is finally going to get a chance at becoming part of that defensive end rotation in the pass rush. He's been very good on special teams, although, he's made a couple of silly mistakes. At the same time, he's been very active, very athletic. He's got his hand on a punt the other day and also made a few tackles on specials. And we're going to see if he can bring some of that energy to the defense and perhaps get after the quarterback, because Michael Vick is a guy the Giants have to hit.
201-939-4513 is the phone number. Also, all things social media. You can find us on Twitter at Giants. Make sure you include that hashtag Giants Chat. We monitor Twitter throughout the show and share your questions and comments. Let's go to Brian in New York. Brian, welcome. You're first up.
Hey, I was wondering, I got two questions. One fantasy one for Anita and a Giants one for Paul.
Okay, why don't you do the start with Paul first. Let's talk Giants, and then before we let you go, I'll answer your fantasy question.
Giants. I was wondering if, obviously, when Eli does have time to get the ball off, these receivers are not seeing the field the same way as Eli is. I'm wondering if we could do a little of what the defense did in 2011 to fix things and simplify things, like have set routes so everybody's on the same page, at least for a drive or two, see how that works. Either that or Hakeem Nicks needs to spend more time with Eli so they can fix this, because it's horrid. Absolutely horrid.
Well, nobody...
And my fan...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well,
I tell you what, why don't I answer that real quick? Nobody spends more time with his receivers than Eli does, maybe except for Peyton out in Denver with his guys. So this is not a matter of them not studying hard enough or not working hard enough or not knowing each other well enough. That's not what this is about. This is about either breakdowns on the O-line when Eli's trying to get the ball out to a certain player in a certain route, or it's about defenses understanding that they're going to play more physical, tougher at the line. They're going to throw the guys off their routes just long enough because they know the Giants can't keep out the pass rush for more than just a couple of seconds. And that kind of wrecks things too sometimes. I mean, we've heard Eli on a number of occasions during the first month of the season talk about how they had a play drawn up and they thought they were going to get it, and then things broke down and they weren't able to actually go through with the play. So, I don't know necessarily that it's schematic in terms of the lack of production from an Akeem Nicks and a Reuben Randall. I think that's just a domino effect of some of the other problems that this offense is having, and they're just suffering along with these other issues. You follow?
Yep.
Okay.
Anita. Yes, what's your fantasy question?
I have Peyton Manning and both Phillip Rivers as my quarterback.
Ooh.
And
you need to throw out some trade.
I was gonna ask you about a trade proposal I made.
I'm a little
weak at my receiver position, so I made a proposal. Peyton Manning and Trent Richardson for Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush. What do you think about that?
I'm sorry, what is it again?
Peyton Manning and Trent Richardson for Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush.
Wow. I do like that, but I would rather I would if I were you, I would rather offer Phillip Rivers than Peyton Manning. I don't think you want to get rid of Peyton Manning.
I don't think they do it for Phillip Rivers. But thank you for your opinion.
Yeah, if I were you, I would not. I mean, Peyton Manning is just. I mean, just to give you some stats. And thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. Really quick, first quarter stats already in fantasy football. Peyton Manning has 151 points. That's 35 more than the number two quarterback. His average draft position was 26, which means that he was drafted in the third round of the majority of drafts in fantasy football. So that's unbelievable value. Phillip Rivers right now stands as a top three quarterback with 110 points. So my suggestion to you would be do not trade Peyton Manning. But Phillip Rivers sitting as the number three quarterback in fantasy football, and the way that he's been able to throw the ball with a really not a very healthy wide receiving core, that's very tempting. And for somebody who's out there who, let's say, has Colin Kaepernick, who's not performing, somebody who has Russell Wilson, who's not performing, I would definitely look at their rosters and make some offers. But I would not trade Peyton Manning. I would trade Phillip Rivers.
Well, sounds like good advice to me. Heck, I had Peyton Manning last year coming off of injury when we had our little fantasy game here, and I took him an awful lot, and a lot of folks thought I was crazy.
201-939-4513. Let's continue with Sharon in Irvington. Sharon, welcome.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. I go on the Giants page regularly, check, you know, injuries, and I know about the Fitzer injuries, and I'm like, oh, my God, let us pray. But anyway, So I see where it says, you know, the roster, transactions, injury list, blah, blah, blah. Where it says transactions, I saw where it said Steve Baker and Ty Powell were added to the practice squad. Does that mean that they're added to the team as players now? And hopefully soon they'll be on the field to help us. One is the offensive lineman, I'm pretty sure. The other one is the outside linebacker.
Yeah, Baker's an offensive lineman. He's like 6'7". He's a real big guy. Practice squad guys, you have eight men that you can have on your practice squad at any one time. And those are guys who help you get through practice because you've got so many injured fellas that can't go. And you still need to be able to field teams when you're going through your workouts during the week. Now, of course, it means if you're at least here and you're working with a team, you've got a chance that you may get elevated to the 53. But no, it doesn't mean that they're automatically going to be Giants on game day.
Okay, but it could lead.
It could
to
lead.
That.
It could, sure.
So I can pray.
If you like.
That they can get added, because Lord have mercy knows. And what about Dan Connor? Will he be playing this week? Because he's supposed to be replacing Heinowski.
You mean John Connor, the fullback?
My bad.
That's okay. He was dressed last week but did not really get in the game. I think they need to coach him up a little bit. Perhaps this week he will have a chance.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Again, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Sharon. I'm sorry. Let's go to Walter in Pennsylvania. Walter, welcome.
Hello, yes. I'd like to talk about the defensive line with the Giants. This coming week and how they've been playing in the last three games or four games that we played or are going to play. You know, there's really no exceptions when it comes to the defensive line. That's our we need that, and I think it, sometimes it comes down to it's more effective when we're focused. I don't think Eli's focused. I really don't, and I think that it. He's just not in it. I don't think his mind is there. But at the same time, he's having to worry about guys coming across the line.
All right, hold on a second. You went from defensive line to all of a sudden Eli Manning. You lost me.
Well,
did you mean offensive line from the beginning of your call?
Offensive line.
I thought you
did.
All right, that's okay. I just wanted to make sure we got that right because the defensive line's not playing real well either.
It's both, really. I mean,
exactly.
When it comes down to you know, play a game, I mean, it comes down to the defensive line, offensive line, and we're just, I don't think we're focused this year. I really don't. I mean, with injuries, guys being traded, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't think we're in it this year. And I hope that we don't lose against the Eagles this week.
All right.
I mean, I think we're playing a B grade team when it comes down to that. I don't think Vic is as good as he used to be.
He's not. Philadelphia's not a very good team. Here's one thing that Anita and I have talked about over the course of the last couple of weeks on and off the air. Some of the Giants veterans clearly have not produced up to the back of their football cards, so to speak. And these young guys like DeMontre Moore and like Jonathan Hankins, who are going to get an opportunity to see the field on Sunday against Philadelphia, need to seize this chance. They need to show Tom Coughlin that they deserve to get some reps. They deserve to be in the rotation because the Giants are in a position where they have nobody else to turn to. You know, it's very hard to alter your 53-man roster once the season starts. Yeah, there are a couple of trades here and there, but for the most part, you are what you are, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. So you've got to get guys from within to rise to the occasion and get the job done. And these young fellas, in particular, Moore and Hankins, are going to be injected into that defensive line against Philly, and we're going to have to find out if they can play.
Again, 201-939-4513. We continue with our calls. We go to Lynn in Columbia. Lynn, welcome.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't want to say preseason is over, but the first four games of the NFL season are over. We got 12 to go. And as has been alluded to by the positive thinkers, including Eric, and that is a nice segment. I'm glad we're able to get Eric on Thursdays. This is our opportunity. You know, we can get back in the race with a win over the Eagles. I think we're going to put better players on the field, and as Paul just alluded to, it becomes a matter of performance by these players. I think the Eagles' game plan is going to be quite simple. It's McCoy to the left, McCoy to the right, McCoy up the middle, screen pass to the right, screen pass to the left. If we can hold McCoy to less than 100 yards total yardage, I think we got a good chance of winning this game.
You understand he does lead the NFL right now in yards from scrimmage, right?
I
you want to hold him under 100.
I know. That's why I think
that is a tall order, Len.
Well, okay. I'm just saying. I think that's the key to success. Let's see if we can do it. If we let McCoy run to the left, run to the right, run up the middle, catch passes and gain yardage, Paul, we're going to be 0-5 Sunday night.
I understand.
I mean, that's what I'm emphasizing.
I understand. Look, this is not pretty.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good way to describe it. And one question for you guys, and then one comment I've been waiting all week to get off my chest, and I hope I have an opportunity to do that here if the call doesn't go too long. The tight end receptions are just absolutely killing the Giants, and they're killing me. You know, I predicted 150 catches by opposing tight ends before the season was over, and I keep thinking to myself, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to get there." I hope not. Somehow there's going to be a little bit of Selleck, and you know, the new kid from Stanford, in there, and you know, those. I mean, they're going to try. All they have to do is look at film. They're going to try to go to the tight ends. I mean, Paul, how do we cover the tight end?
Well, that's a good question, and Anita, you're going to love this one. The two Eagles tight ends have caught 12 passes between them so far this year. Seven of them were for 20 or more yards. Okay, Vic is getting the ball downfield to Ertz and Selleck.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making plays up the seam. And, wow, I know you're a real stickler for watching how tight ends produce in this league. They're getting it done. And this is a problem. You know, the Giants, here's the thing. And again, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. The Giants really have enjoyed the 4-2-5 scheme with the two linebackers being Jaquan Williams and Spencer Paisinger. Okay? But here's the problem. If you do that against the Eagles, McCoy will tear you to ribbons. Okay? So if you're worried about the tight ends and you want to go more athletic in the back seven, McCoy kills you. If you stuff the box and try to take McCoy away, well, now you're really forcing the tight ends and Vic to beat you. Now, that's the way I would go. If it were me, I would try to play a little bit more big, and I would take my chances that way. That would be my picking of the poison right there.
and try to shut down McCoy.
That's what I would do. I would say, okay, you know what? If Celek's going to catch five passes for 100 yards, God bless him. I'd rather have let him try to beat me than McCoy.
Well,
Anita, what do you think?
Another way to look at it is we just frankly have to outscore them, Paul. I mean, maybe if they're going to move the ball and they're going to put points on the board, we got to put points on the board. And we
Get
in the 30s to win it. But I keep thinking, first and foremost, as you just said, it's a tall order. But that's the strategy. That's what we're whispering to each other in the defensive huddle. Stop McCoy.
Yeah.
Hey, one thing. Let me just get one thing off my chest.
Real quick, Lynn, because we do have other calls.
Looking at the injury report, one injury in particular, JPP with that knee contusion, and everybody probably knows where that occurred. There was a play away from JPP, and he had no chance of making this play, and that four-string tight end from Kansas City, McGrath, they just got him off the street. Who killed us? He caught six balls.
Yeah, I know.
So another tight end that killed us. I mean, Paul, Anita, the guy went low on JPP. I mean, went right for the knees. The play was so far away. I don't know what gets into the heads of these guys. I just can't figure it out. That, Paul, was a dirty play. I'm going to say it straight up. That was a dirty play.
Yeah, I was on the field when it happened, and I didn't like it very much myself. But I have not gone back and reviewed it again to see how egregious it was, but I do appreciate what you're saying, and obviously, JPP's feeling it right now, and this is a guy who's trying to get on track after back surgery, and now he's got himself a bit of a sore knee, so we're going to see.
Lance,
thanks.
I had to get that off my chest. Thanks for listening, guys.
I hear you.
Again, trying to rock and roll through a number of these calls. Paul Dottino, Anita Marks with you till around 10:30.
Let me ask you a question before you go any further with the calls. We've talked a lot about over the course of the first 4 weeks of the season how this defensive line is not getting pressure on the quarterback. We also know that Michael Vick is at his most dangerous when he's getting pressured because then he rolls out of the pocket and does all that kind of junk that he likes to do.
Yeah, you need to contain more than...
He's a contained guy. Mm-hmm. So, in a really strange roundabout way, this is not necessarily the week that I want the Giants' pass rush to start chasing him around because that could be bad. They're better off, actually, if they just sit tight, hold their lanes, and keep him clogged up as opposed to pinning their ears back, as you like to say, and getting after him because that's when he takes off and becomes more deadly, don't you think?
That is true, but at the same time, Michael Vick has elevated his accuracy and how he's throwing the football.
True.
He never really had a lot of respect as a quarterback, a passer in the NFL. And this year, more so than others, he actually is gaining that respect. There is a threat when it comes to Michael Vick throwing the football this year. So, with that being said, it's kind of, it's a double-edged sword. What do you do? That's what makes him so difficult to defend.
It's weird because he's throwing the ball in the air. The average length of his throws this year, 11 yards a throw, which is the longest in the league. He's getting the ball downfield, which was not something they did a lot of under Andy Reid. They used that short passing game. It's a different Eagles team. I mean, holy smokes, we've watched it on TV. You've been talking about it all summer, how you couldn't wait to see these guys. This is a very, very different Eagles offense that we're going to see at MetLife Stadium, despite the fact that Shady McCoy is still the focal point.
Again, 201-939-4513. We go to Oregon. David is joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. David, welcome.
Hi, how are you all?
Great.
Hi.
I've been a long-term Giant fan that goes way back to the Y.A. Tittle days. So I have followed them through several states that I've lived in and now in Oregon. And I kind of have a more long-term perspective on what's going on. Even though it's been very difficult for me to watch these games, it looks like, whether they recover this year or not, the opportunity they have is to look at some of the young players and decide who's going to be with them next year and who's not.
No. Don't start thinking that now. It's only week five. Why would you start thinking about that?
No. I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to be. I'm just trying to be realistic. You know, because what you know, in the last game, what impressed me was the defense. I thought they really came out there slugging. And but unfortunately, in football, if the defense is on the field most of the time, you're going to lose the game. It's just, you know, every game I watch, that happens to be the case. And so if they can turn it around, I'm certainly hoping that they can do that. But being a realist, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the improvement. I mean, Cruz has had a couple of good runs, but I basically haven't seen any improvement in the ability to protect Eli. And if I could start to see a little bit more, we get to maybe another half second or so, then I could say, hey, you know, they may be able to turn it around. And I'm hoping they do. But, you know, I mean, having gone from Y.A. Tittle through Tarkington through, I've seen all kinds of ups and downs. And, you know, if the year turns around and they beat Philadelphia, then I'll be rooting for them all the way. Because I root for them whether they win or lose. It doesn't matter. But again, worst case, they have the opportunity to see if some of the young players are going to turn into really good players and they can keep them. Again, I'm still rooting for them to turn the thing around, but I just don't see evidence on the O-line that they're going to be able to do that.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. I think one of the things that we all have to keep in mind, Anita, as we look at this offensive line, you've got the combination of some age, you've got injuries, you've got performance or lack thereof, and when you put all those things together, it becomes a very, very difficult problem to solve.
Well, I guess the positive, especially after yesterday, is the fact that David Deal was able to practice, and he practiced extremely well.
Yeah.
So with that being said, how do you see this? How do you see the offensive line? What's the starting offensive line?
Well, I think that we talked last week about how Deal actually was able to get out there and practice a little bit, and now this week will be week two for him to be working out after his hand surgery. I have to believe they're going to try to get him in there at guard. I have to believe that because of his experience and the fact that even though he may not have much left as a tackle anymore in this league, you can always move a tackle into guard and squeeze an extra year out of him. Excuse me. And I also believe one thing about David Deal, we know he's a fighter. He may not have a lot of gas left in his tank, but we know he's a fighter. And that's one thing the Giants definitely need to be doing right now.
201-939-4513. We continue with Chris in New Jersey. Chris, welcome.
Hi. Good morning, Anita. Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Great show as always. And, you know, being a Giants fan, I try to be as optimistic as possible. You know, overall, I try to be a half glass full, you know, type of guy. So just looking at the offensive line, Paul and Anita, Larry O'Donnell, the backup tight end, or I guess you could say third string tight end, but with Robinson being hurt and out, he's really the second behind.
Well Pasco and Myers are 1 and 2, and
right.
Donnell is number 3. And quite honestly, none of the three threw a block on the 3rd and 1 from the 45 last weekend in Kansas City.
Right.
That was just terrible.
I hear you. Going back to training camp, what did you think of his blocking during training camp? Was he better than Myers or about the same?
Well, to be honest with you, none of the tight ends have really blocked all that well since training camp started. Even Pasco. Right. Pasco has seen his better days. I'll be honest with you. You know, he was a bit part when he got to the Giants, was an overachiever who made the team, did some things for them, was versatile. He's a good guy. He's a blue-collar worker. The coaches love him. But the bottom line is, you know, he was an overachiever. And I think all the juice is out of that orange right now. I just don't know that you can rely on him as much as they are relying on him. He should be, again, a bit part at best. And he's become, you know, much more than that because of the injuries the Giants have had and because Brandon Myers did not pick up a whole lot in terms of blocking skills.
I've been trying to be in his corner for the longest time, but after last week, I mean,
Thought he was an adequate blocker or at least somewhat adequate in Oakland and that they could get him here and coach him up and teach him up and they could add that part to his game. It hasn't happened. In fact, I think what we've all found out here in New York is that he's not just barely adequate, he's flat out not so good.
Yeah, that's what it appears. And Paul and Nita, one more question. With Herzlich, I mean, last week he seemed like he's pretty active. And was that a case of him just not being caught up in the wash, taking on centers and guards? Or was it was he actually getting off those blocks? Because he did seem like he was around the ball a lot.
He was. I think Mark Herzlich had some of his best snaps as a Giant in that Kansas City game. Having said that, he also had trouble in coverage once again. That is not his strong suit. But against the run, I agree with you. I thought he was active. I thought he was getting around blocks. Not so much fighting them off, but getting around them. And, you know, that's something the Giants are going to have because, let's face it, as things stand, it's not like they're going to get any linebackers walking through the front door.
Right, right. And one last question. I know you got to run. With at the center position, I mean, Cordell doesn't look like a real big guy. But when
he's
you
not.
Look at his, he looks, I mean, they say he's 6'3", 320, but it appears he's like a soft 6'3".
He's an undersized center for this league. He has to win on finesse and smarts. And unfortunately, there are a lot of other defensive tackles in this league who can muscle him and use their size and strength to their advantage, and then he becomes overpowered and things kind of fold from there. So it is an issue when Cordell's playing center. There are certain limitations you just have to admit to, and that's a tough thing for an offensive coordinator to deal with.
Again, 201-939-4513. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show, so now's the time to get your calls in. Anita Marks, Paul DeTino, of course, you. Let's go to Gene, calling in from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Gene, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I listen to everybody, and I've been a longtime Giants fan, and they're great and all, but when are we going to stop giving them this pass? I mean, can't we just say what's really going on, that they're a second-rate team, and they're playing up to what they should be? I mean, with the linebacking core, And Nick's hurt, and this Reuben Randall, who I don't think could catch water if he fell out of a boat. The oldness on the offensive line. I mean, David Deal was great, and we all loved him, Super Bowl and everything, but he's old, and he's getting toasted on the line right now. Will Beatty never matured, never lived up to what his size. I just think that we're missing the whole point that they're not that great of a team this year. We haven't had any good draft picks, and they're not playing well.
Paul?
I think in a number of cases there were miscalculations made in terms of draft picks and also in terms of how much certain players may have had left, and also in terms of how many injuries or how much injuries had affected some of those players. And I think when you add all those things up, you have a team right now that, to some degree, you could say is underachieving, and maybe to another degree, it is what it is. The only good news, as Anita opened the show with, the NFC East is not very good across the board. And so, is it okay that the, quote, substandard team that the Giants are putting on the field right now is competitive, or at least trying to be competitive?
Let me say this as well, and we talked about this a lot this preseason and while we were hosting shows throughout training camp, and that is, in the 4 years I've been here, I've never seen the potential to have an offense as explosive as this is. I mean, just to look over and see Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz, and even though the Collard really has little expectation for Reuben Randall, I happen to disagree. We were able to see what Brandon Myers was able to do in Oakland with a much more, really, a worse offense and not a quarterback as good as Eli Manning.
Yeah.
So there is unbelievable potential for this offense. I mean, we know what the problem is. The problem is the offensive line. Eli's not getting enough time to get the ball to the talent that's around him. So I have to disagree in that regard to the caller.
Look, it all comes off the line. We know that. If the foundation's no good, the house tends to fall. I mean, you know, Anita, one thing, though, that we did talk about during the offseason was that despite the fact that all these weapons were going to be at Eli's disposal, we did warn people that if the running game didn't get going, if the O-line didn't help that running game going and give the Giants a chance to become more balanced, we did throw out a little bit of a yellow flag there and say, hey, you know what, you can't just live by the pass alone. And the Giants kind of have been doing that for the last 2 years for the most part. Even though Bradshaw had 1,000 last year, it wasn't a consistent 1,000. You know, we've kind of seen the warning signs here that at some point, living by the pass was going to bite them in the ass.
Whoa.
Excuse me, but in the rear end.
Good morning to you. 201-939-4513. Let's continue with our calls. We've got John in Florida. John, welcome.
Hi, Nia. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Great show.
Thank you.
I've got a couple questions and a comment. It seems like our defenses have been schemed against. They're rushing in, and we're not getting the ball out quick enough, or vice versa. Our defensive line is going through and not getting there because they're getting the ball out quick. I haven't seen any batted down balls at the line of scrimmage. Are we just rushing, like, head down to the quarterback?
Well, I mean, I want to ask Anita about this because we've talked about this many times in terms of, okay, if you don't get sacks, what do you need to do to affect the other team's quarterback? Well, you have to get hits on him. You've got to get pressures on him. Or one of the other ways is to make sure you clog his passing lanes and try to knock balls down and try to affect his throws and his vision. There are a lot of ways you can affect the other team's passer. It doesn't always have to be sacks. But I think the call's making a good point, Anita. The Giants aren't getting a lot of anything. It's not just the sacks. They're not getting a lot of anything. And that's what's bad.
What did you want to ask?
Well, you agree with me that, you know, it's not always just the sack numbers, although the sack numbers are terrible. 4 sacks through 4 games
no,
is terrible.
No, it's your hurries, it's your hits.
But all those other things add up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we both know enough to know that that can impact an offense, and the Giants aren't getting that either.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, again, you know, majority of people are not at a football game, and when they are, they're kind of like the TV where they follow the ball. But I don't think that most people understand that, you know, that three-step allowance that defensive linemen are entitled to, where they have three steps. If they're rushing the quarterback, they're entitled to three steps and hit. Doesn't mean tackle. It means hit. And so when a quarterback is constantly hit and is going down, the majority of passes a quarterback completes, he's typically watching on his back. So that's another thing. Even though we're seeing, you know, oh, Eli Manning got sacked this many times. Well, it's beyond that. It's not just sacks. It's hits and hurries. And it's astronomical what he's dealing with this season. But again, people typically follow the ball and so does the camera. So you're not really seeing how beaten and battered Eli Manning is each and every week.
Good news, Philadelphia doesn't have a very strong pass rush either. So Eli should have an opportunity to try to work some magic on Sunday.
Hopefully. Let's continue with Steve in D.C. Steve, welcome.
Hey, guys. Great show. Thanks for having me. Nita, I did get a chance to watch your show last night. I know you were sorry you didn't wear pink, but I thought the dress looked real nice on you.
Anyway, thank you.
with that being said, you know, my biggest concern, you know, everybody pretty much touched on what I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to kind of get into the head of Tom Coughlin for a minute, if we could. Because one thing I've kind of noticed to me is it always seems like we only play who we pay. And it just doesn't seem like, you know, I'm actually excited to see what these young guys can do. You know, I feel like we do have talent. We only really get to see them shine for like 1 year. They may sit on the bench for 1 or 2 years, and they may have one good year with us. And depending on how good of a year is, we probably won't end up signing them. You know, especially on the defensive line, I wanted to kind of get your feedback on who do you think is playing well. I kind of think Linville's kind of been, you know, the really only consistent tackle this far this year. You know, so I'm going to kind of figure out, first of all, is he healthy, and do you guys see us re-signing him next year?
Well, Linville Joseph checked in on the injury report yesterday with knee and ankle injuries, and so he did not practice. Colin Jenkins has a knee and an Achilles problem. He did not practice. He was walking around in a boot, and Sean Rogers has a sore back. He did not practice. So I'll be honest with you, and Anita said this before, the Giants' defensive tackles have played well. Again, more against the run than against the pass. I mean, they haven't gotten any sacks themselves. But they've done a good job of clogging the interior of that front. Now, you're talking about the top three. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Those are your top three defensive tackles right there. So that's not too cool.
I want to see what, you know, DeMonte Moore and Hankins can do. So as long as we can control the run, I'm okay. I think the secondary is doing a pretty good job. I we have such big offensive issues, it's really hard for me to assess the defense at the time. But one other quick question, guys. I noticed that, you know, we had Wilson returning the kicks last week, and, you know, and we put Scott in where I think we should have been playing Wilson. So what's going on with Michael Cox? Can we expect to see him more this week? And is he healthy? Will he be returning kicks? Will he be in the backfield?
Well, he is healthy, and he's a little bit puzzled himself why he hasn't been on the kickoff return team the last couple of weeks. But that's honestly because it's a numbers game. The Giants feel they need an extra body in the secondary because they're a little nicked up. They feel they need an extra body at linebacker, obviously, because they're nicked up there too. Remember last week, Paisinger and Williams were both dinged going into the game. We know that they've got to get every offensive lineman who they can dress active on Sunday because they're thin along the offensive line. Now they're thin at the defensive line because all these tackles are hurt. I don't see how Michael Cox is going to get a jersey on Sunday. They just don't have enough numbers.
I hope he does. Last thing I wanted to say, guys, I kind of agree, which I said at the beginning of the year when I first heard the first interview with Brandon Myers. He doesn't even seem like he wanted to be a Giant for whatever reason. I didn't think he was ever going to embrace blocking, and so far he's proved me right, and, you know, I'm just done with the guy. So, hey, great show. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll be listening off there, guys.
Thanks.
Let's make a comment here about Brandon Myers. Brandon Myers has never been known as a guy who's a tight end who's a good blocker.
Right.
I mean, it did not happen in Oakland. I mean, Brandon Myers is more of a receiving tight end. That's why he was brought here.
They had hoped he could develop a little bit more on the other side of the skill set, and it just has not happened. And you know what? It is what it is.
Let's take one more call before we sign off for the day, and that's Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
Shakes, there was no way Anita was going to close this show without getting you in there.
That's good. That's good. I've been on a little Giant strike. Been on a little Giant strike, man. They really upset me.
Well, what's your question, Shakes?
It's not that I really have a question, but it's just that I have this thing, like, with the defense, like, who is going to step up? Okay, I guess it is a question. Who is going to step up and be that communicator? I mean, because to me, it seems like the communication is gone on the defense. It looks like we're playing Pop Warner to me. So, like I was saying last week, like somebody like how Antonio Pierce was, like we don't have that, and we need that. And the offensive line is just terrible. And we decided to go with Pugh, and I was screaming about Ogletree the whole off season. I look a little right, don't I?
Shakes, thanks for the phone call. Let's end it on that. Communication on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, I don't know that it's a lack of communication as much as it is the Giants just haven't been getting a big pass rush. I think they're communicating okay because as I look at that secondary, they've played pretty well. And quite honestly, when the linebackers have not done well, it's because they've missed tackles or they've gotten caught out of position, not necessarily because they didn't know the play or that they were confused. So I'm not so sure that communication is an issue here. I just think it's just an easy word to throw out because the Giants are having some woes, but I don't think it's applicable.
We thank you so much for tuning in this afternoon, or really this morning. Keep in mind, John Schmoke and Lance Meadow, they will be back tomorrow, same time, 9:30 a.m. right here on Giants.com for Big Blue Kickoff Live. And another reminder, to stay tuned to Giants.com at 4 p.m. later on this afternoon. Big Blue Hits Live with myself, Roman Oben, and Paul Dottino. Have a great day, everybody.